Hello and welcome to the Text and Academic Authors Association teleconference, Tips and Tricks for the Do-It-Yourself Indexer, moderated by Seth Maislin. Seth Maislin is a freelance indexer and consultant who has written over 1,000 indexes on subjects from midwifery to capital punishment, statistics programming to sports marketing, and Asian theater to forensics. He is the managing partner of Potomac Indexing LLC. He was the 2006-07 president of the American Society of Indexers, is the founder of the Tech Indexing mailing list, and is an adjunct instructor at three Massachusetts colleges. He is a regular author and speaker at indexing-related events, both domestic and overseas, and author of a blog on indexing and information architecture topics. Visit his website at taxonomist.tripod.com. I now turn the teleconference over to Seth Maislin.
Hello, and thank you. This is a talk that I've put together. I've delivered many different talks about indexing, and I should say that the majority of them are pretty much designed for people who are professional indexers or people who are indexing as part of their jobs. So, for example, a technical writer who has to prepare a manual for something may index as a part of their job. Indexing is not a part of authoring. Although the index is required, and authors are often asked to pay for the index if they don't do it themselves, it's really not an authoring skill. It's an indexing skill. It's its own thing. This is why I make a living writing indexes, because I've got the right training and the background and the mindset to do it. So it's very unusual for me to present a talk essentially teaching non-indexers how to index without the expectation that they're going to be indexing for a living. We're talking, in most cases, you have one index to write. I've said in many cases that I tend to, in fact, recommend against writing your own index because there are a number of challenges. That does not mean that you shouldn't. It does not mean you can't do a good job. My recommendation is usually based one more in terms of time and money, in the sense where it's a lot faster and cheaper to just get somebody else who knows what they're doing to do it than to do it yourself. However, for this presentation, for the next hour, I am going to break all my own rules, and I'm going to say, look, if you really want to do it yourself, if you're really only going to just do it once just for the experience of it, or a couple of times just because you really want to save the money, for example, then I'm going to give you some advice on how to do it well. The first piece of advice, really before I get started, is that it is a specialized process, and this presentation is not going to substitute for genuine training, for textbooks on indexing, for conversations with indexers, but rather what I want to provide is sort of a framework into which you'll put that training. Or if you think you know enough and don't want to get any training at all, then here's just some general advice, and buyer beware. There are some resources that you can use to learn more about indexing, to learn a lot more of the basics. My strongest recommendation would be the American Society for Indexing, or ASI, and their website is at asindexing.org. There's a tremendous amount of information there, including publications and mailing lists, and in fact, there's a brand new textbook which came out which might be of relevance. It's called Indexing for Editors and Authors. And it is not what I'm talking about here, but it is designed to talk about indexing for people who are often not writing the index themselves, such as editors and authors. How to interact with an indexer, questions you should ask, how you can be helpful, and how not to be unhelpful. And it's actually a great book and just came out within the last month. And if you have any questions, for those who are on the call, feel free to jump in at any time. Otherwise, I'm just going to go ahead and dive in. Let me start by sort of giving you the biggest overview of indexing I can give. I like to think of it as sort of my indexing in three easy steps. Think of it as the phases of the indexing process. The first is what to index. That is making a determination about what in the documentation should be represented in the index somehow. If you fail to index all of Chapter 4, then your index bombs. That's that. But it's not just that, it's also what within Chapter 4 deserves to be indexed. There's a lot of material that is not represented in an index, and that's okay, but it's a subjective call. Once you've figured out what you're indexing, the next challenge is to come up with words for that. So the second phase is what to call it. You've found some topic, some nugget of information that you think is valuable enough to be represented in the index somehow. Now you have to do it. What word or series of words or variations of words do you want to use when you create that index? Some cases the choice is obvious, in some cases it isn't. And of course, keep in mind that the vocabulary you're using as an author may not be the vocabulary that the readers are using when they try to look something up. So often you have to broaden your thinking when you choose your language. And the third phase, once you've got all your words in place, is how you want to organize those words. Most people think of indexing as lots of sub-entries and cross-references, and although that's true, it is still a subjective call when to use them and how to use them. The words that you've chosen may not fit well together with other words you've chosen, so you have to figure out how to fit them together. Main entry, sub-entry, multiple sub-entries under the same main entry, cross-references, basically the organization that comes out of it. You can think of a search engine as not having that third step. With a search engine, you've figured out what to put your tags in, and you figured out what language you want to build in terms of your keywords, since you know what people are going to type into the engine. But there is no organization. Either they type something in and they make a hit, they find something, or they don't. So in a printed index, you do have to worry about how that's organized, and that organization is a huge value add to the book. So within these three phases, everything I'm going to talk about here will fall among those phases. In actual practice, you don't index in these three phases. You don't go through the book necessarily and figure out what you want to include, and then only after you've done that for the entire book do you go back and think about language, and then after you've done all of that, you go back and organize it. However, I will say that the phases are distinct enough that you could do that. And some indexers do this to some extent. They go through the book, and they might do just the first phase, which they might take a highlighter and mark things that they want to index. In fact, that's something I'm going to recommend in a little bit. You go through with a highlighter and you say, you know, mark things that you want to appear in the index. Yes, 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 yes. And then later you do all your thinking and typing. Other indexers will take the first two steps, that is figuring out what to index and what to call those things, and combine those into a single process. So you go through the book with your highlighter or with a pen, but you don't just mark things. You also make notes in the margins. Use this word. People do circles and arrows and boxes and write on top of their own text as a way of trying to figure out what are all the terms for the things that they think are worth putting in the index. And then that final phase of where to put it is really your data input, where you take your software or whatever it is that you're using to create the index, and you look at all your notes, and you type up your notes in some kind of consistent pattern. That's another great recommendation. But in the end, everything comes down to those three phases. I like separating the phases out because they are different ways of thinking. And if you can think about each process as a separate thing and not try to do them all together, then you can find ways of being extremely efficient. If you are trying to figure out what to index, what to call it, and where to put it all at the same time, you're not being efficient. And you could think of it in the sense where if you had six peanut butter and jelly sandwiches that you had to make, which is easier, laying out all the bread and then doing all the peanut butter and then doing all the jelly, then closing and cutting all the sandwiches, sort of in this collated style, or making a sandwich, cutting it, and bagging it before you get to the next one. Clearly, it makes more sense to do it in these kinds of steps. Indexing doesn't feel like that, but every professional indexer will tell you that efficiency comes from breaking it down into those three phases: what to index, what to call it, and where to put it. Now, as I go into the recommendations, again, my purpose of the recommendation is to say, here you're in a situation where you want to write an index, and you want to do it efficiently. And so that's the tips and tricks approach. I'm not going to get very much into the thinking of why you do these things, so much as I'm going to just try to find a way to make it as expedient as possible. But before I do, I will reinstate the question of, are you sure you want to do it yourself? Perhaps the most efficient way to write an index is to get somebody else to do it for you, because it takes absolutely no time. I'm going to give you the advantages and the disadvantages. The advantages of having you do it is that it's cheaper. Right off the bat, I can tell you that it's cheaper. Generally speaking, to bring in an external person to do it, a professional indexer, and I'm not talking a graduate student, just, you know, somebody who will do it for free or for the kudos, but someone who actually gets paid for it, someone like me, for a textbook or some professional material, it can cost between $2.50 per page to $6 per page. So if you've got a 400-page book at $2.50 a page, that's $1,000. And you're talking that's the minimum price. If there's a rush, if the material is particularly complicated, if it's a profound book in some way, or just has a large audience where you really, really don't want to tolerate any mistakes, you have to start charging more as an indexer, which means you would have to start paying more. And if it does come out of your royalties, you are talking about a $2,000 fee. And that seems like a lot. Most people are not publishing books for the money. They're publishing it for some other reason. So $2,000 adds up. Doing it yourself will save you that money. However, keep in mind that it will take you much longer to write this index than it would a professional. Another advantage for you to write it is that you have a greater sense of ownership. There's something about writing the index to your own material. You've already written the entire book. Why not write that last piece? Get the whole book. Also, you have this idea that if you know the material better than anyone else, why would you ever let somebody else index it? And it is true, you have an advantage over the knowledge. You may know the audience, the vocabulary, and the subject matter better than anyone else. Even a professional indexer who has experience in your field can't know your book nearly as well as you know it, since, after all, you've spent months and months writing it. And I will tell you that indexing is fun for some people, maybe not all, but there is a certain mindset, an organization, a gaming attitude that can come from indexing. It's certainly why I enjoy it. And if you're one of those people, then, yeah, it's kind of fun and you want to give it a try. I will tell you that as with writing a book, there's sort of a romantic period that lasts maybe halfway through the process, more or less for different people. You're enjoying it, you're writing, you feel good. You're indexing, it feels good, you're making progress. And then somewhere along the line, it starts to become boring, tedious, challenging, impossible, tiresome, and so forth. As with any long-term project, it's hard to maintain your attitude and your enthusiasm all the way to the end. So if you are going to index your book and it's a short one and you think it's fun, then I say absolutely go for it. The longer your book gets, the more disciplined you're going to have to be to get it finished. And the reality is you don't get to index until you're finished. So if you've been writing a book for 6 months, and many books take longer, the idea that you're going to spend month number 7 writing the index may sound like ultimate torture. So do keep in mind that you're a human being and that you have needs. If you do get a professional, you will, for the most part, get a professional quality index. Granted, you can save money by bringing in a novice, someone who's apprenticing or is new to the field. You can also save money if you have a very technical book, but you get somebody who doesn't know the subject matter. Sometimes you can negotiate a discount. But you will get a professional quality. There is an advantage going to somebody else because it's not your responsibility. You can walk away from it. You can say, I'm done. You can continue to focus on last-minute edits to the book instead of worrying about the index. You really can't write an index at the same time. So if the index is due while you're also trying to provide edits, that's just making things more complicated than they need to be. And there is an advantage when you bring in a third person because they bring in a third-party perspective. You may know the vocabulary for your book, but that doesn't mean you really have a grasp of the vocabulary of everybody else out there. In fact, the vocabulary of everybody else might be wrong in your perspective and in your training and your experience, but the reality is those are the words that people are using, and you need to include them in your index. And if you've trained yourself to never say the wrong stuff, or it feels very weird to put those terms in your index, you have a handicap that a third person is not going to have. Another set of recommendations. So now you've decided that's it. You are going to write your index. You're going to save the money. It seems like fun. You just want to get it over with. Or maybe you're having a hard time finding an indexer that you really enjoy working with. Authors can be very particular when it comes to their materials. You've decided that's it. You're going to write the index yourself. Okay.
Seth, before we go there, may I ask a question?
Yes, of course.
I have difficulty understanding how someone – a professional indexer, I know that their set of indexing skills, but then the other part of it is the knowledge of the subject matter. And I have never understood how someone who is highly qualified at indexing can take a book that he or she knows nothing about and provide a meaningful index. And one of the reasons that I've come to that conclusion that it's very difficult or not possible is that I've had a number of professional indexers do a number of books, and every time I do not get professional work out of it. I get some ridiculous kinds of entries. So if you could, before you give us tips, if you could speak to that, I'd appreciate it.
Absolutely. Now, obviously, I can't speak to the specific books and indexers that you've worked with. There are indexers of varying quality. There are indexers with different backgrounds. you know, if you were to tell me that you were writing a book on economics and the only indexer that you could find, you know, their specialty is gardening, then I would expect to see some weird things. I think it is necessary to know something about the subject matter and as much of the subject matter as possible. But, of course, that's something you many times have to pay for, and it's an easy place for publishers to skimp. They find an indexer who's done other books. They like this person. They like the business arrangement. And, well, it's not a perfect fit, but it's close. So it is possible that you can have a professional indexer not knowing the subject matter very well, and I agree, the product that comes out is just not going to be what you like. I think, you know, from a very basic level, the question is, if you have someone who really knows the subject but nothing about indexing, I don't think you're going to get a good product at all. I think you're going to have language problems. I think you're going to have structural problems. I think you're going to have format and layout issues. The wrong decisions are going to be made throughout the process, despite knowledge of the material. On the other hand, if you bring someone who knows everything about indexing and nothing about the subject matter, the index is going to look wonderful, but it's going to seem like it was written by an idiot. Because the reality is, they're not going to know exactly what to include. They're not going to be using exactly the right language. In other words, you run into the same kinds of problems in both situations. I am biased, but it is my opinion that if you had to choose between someone who really knows the subject but no indexing and someone who really knows indexing but no subject, I still think you're going to be better off with the second. But the product you get is still going to be terrible. In other words, neither situation is really desirable. What you want is something where somebody has a lot of skill in either the subject or indexing and as much as possible in the other. And then, of course, the results vary because it's subjective. If you're going to work with an indexer and you're concerned about the quality of their work, there are a number of things that you can do in terms of helping them understand the subject, helping them understand the audience. Indexers hate getting, here's a list of terms. Because truthfully, that's not helpful at all. Authors do it all the time. I'm telling you as an indexer, it is completely unhelpful. The kind of guideline, however, that would be useful is, here's a third reference where you can look up some terms. Here's a glossary. I want you to understand these ideas. Here are some kinds of things to make sure you include in your index. Not the terms, but the ideas. Often where an indexer who doesn't know the subject is going to fall down in the most obvious way is in the way terms are combined or not combined. That is, the relationships between main entries and their sub-entries, or when you have terms that appear in the index under two different words that are essentially the same thing, but they aren't combined. That's because the indexer does not know the field well enough. They may also see things that look technical and important, but really aren't. In that case, I think it's really important for the author to be able to step in and delete things, saying, that's kind of silly. No one will look that up. Deleting is extremely easy, and that's something that can help repair an index that could otherwise be better. But the reality is unless you find an indexer who knows everything about the subject or an author who knows everything about indexing, yes, it's not going to be a perfect product. There are ways in which you can do that. I generally think that even if you do choose a third-party indexer, that you find some way to be involved, either in terms of providing general advice, in being a resource if somebody has questions, in providing external resources that you think the indexer might find helpful, and taking some time at the very end of the process to clean up what the indexer creates. If the indexer creates something that's very professional but has some silliness in it, that's actually very easy to edit. It's a lot harder to create something that is poorly indexed and fix it so it's well indexed. This is why I think the indexer who knows nothing about the subject matter is going to create a better product. It's a better product because it is fixable, as opposed to the author who knows nothing about indexing and creates something. An indexer doesn't know how to fix it. They still have to go back to the book. They still have to make changes. They still have to figure things out. So I usually think that starting from an indexer and finding ways to support it is a better process.
What about the author doing the first two phases and a professional indexer doing the organization? Have you ever used
that
model?
I like that idea. I don't think it works in practice. If the author knows a lot about indexing, then it can be done. Generally, the last phase involves a lot of data entry, and so the use of a professional indexer just to type in your terms isn't necessarily good enough. Also, you don't often get a big picture if you're just going through and not doing the data entry. The data entry is a lot of, it's an opportunity for you to rethink or unthink certain decisions that you've made. So I highlight a term because I think it's important. I think an author who understands what to include and what not to include could do that effectively. I think a third-party indexer is going to be a little better at coming up with language because you're not locked into author think. And in terms of the organization, I think both the author and the indexer can do a pretty decent job if they understand the material and the process. And I should also point out, you know, that we're talking in generalizations. There may be certain books where it is very possible to do this and other books where it's not. If you take something as simple as indexing a glossary, how hard is that? Anyone can do that. All the terms have been chosen. All the structure has been chosen. It's flat. And all the vocabulary has been chosen. So there you go. You know what to include and what it's called and where to put it. Indexing a glossary could be done by anybody. And so how far is your book from a glossary? And that will help you decide to some extent, you know, how much energy has to go into it.
Textbook. That would not be a very interesting book.
No, it would not. Nor would the index be particularly useful.
Yeah.
Textbooks have a lot of structure, and that structure can be extremely helpful for anybody writing the index, both the author and the indexer. Whereas something that reads more like a dissertation that doesn't have a very fine structure or a very constrained set of language is going to be more challenging and is going to require additional skills by everybody involved. Textbooks have elements that are easy to index. Anything that shows up in boldface, anything that shows up in a bulleted list. These are things that just ring out as, hey, maybe this goes in the index and it's not very hard to put together. It's usually the narrative parts of a book of any type that are more challenging. Now, some indexers thrive on that challenge. They like the analysis of very dense materials. I am not one of those people. I tend to like dealing with the structure. But usually the more structured it is, the more technical it is. And there are indexers who don't thrive on that, and that's where I do excel. Indexers, as authors, have different personalities and different strong suits. And again, this is one of the reasons why if you are going to bring in an indexer, you find an indexer who's very comfortable in the field in which you're writing.
How would one find such an indexer?
The easiest approach to find an indexer, well, I mean, I can advertise myself and my own company. That's not what this call is about. If for a third-party approach, again, the American Society for Indexers, they have a number of members. They have a job bank where you can post something. They have an indexer locator, which is essentially a directory of indexers, and you can search among them. You can also, if you're working at a university that has a press, you can talk to them. So, for example, I'm very near the Massachusetts Institute of Technology and Harvard, and there are these institutions do have their own presses and have worked with indexers before. I do know a number of professors who will go to their graduate students to write the index. Some of them may have done this before and therefore have some knowledge. I would even go so far as if you really want to do that, you could always send your graduate student to an indexing class before you allow them to touch your manuscript. And there are courses that are offered both through the American Society of Indexers and through other private institutions and individuals.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Yes, the ultimate resource for just about everything is the American Society for Indexers. You'll find just about everything you're looking for there, except, of course, you know, in-depth training. But there is a course that's offered by ASI, which you can take if you're interested. And the reality is it doesn't cost that much money to take an indexing course. So if you think you're going to index more than one book, that is, you're not just doing it this once to see how it works out, but you've done it once and you like it and you plan on doing it again and again and again, then training is not such a bad thing. And I will also say that the training for indexing has applications outside of book indexing. It will help you understand how websites are put together, how other things are organized. Indexing is really an understanding of how information is communicated in organized ways, and clearly that will help you also in your writing as well.
Great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So if you decide that you are going to index, you've looked for an indexer, you can't find somebody you like, you don't want to spend the money, whatever the reason, some of the earliest advice I can give you is to make sure that you've set yourself up in the proper working environment to actually write this index. Indexing is not writing. It is a creative process. It's also a meticulous process. I suppose writing is both of those things as well. But you may have a favorite style for your writing. You like to write out in your back porch. You like to write in a library cubicle. You like to work right there at your desk while your email application is pinging away at you all day. Maybe you like to write longhand. Whatever that environment is, it does not necessarily mean that that's the way you should index. In fact, I'm going to tell you later that I strongly recommend that you index from hard copy. That is, you get a printout, generally a single-sided printout, as much as that may not be environmentally the best choice, so that you can flip around and mark pages with a highlighter or a pen to go through those first phases. That may not be how you write, in which case you might need a bigger space than you're used to, a less windy space than you're used to. Indexing, you may find that you work better with music or with silence. It depends. But don't assume that the way you're writing is also the way you're going to want to index. Also, you don't want to get your writing and your indexing mixed up. So as you're indexing, you're going to be looking at your own material, and you're going to think, oh, wait, I should change this. Oh, I add this. Oh, I love this sentence. Let me read it again four times because I'm so proud of myself. These are all going to happen, and that's okay, but you do not want them to separate you too far from the indexing process. If you think like a writer, you're not indexing properly. You have to think like an indexer. So I generally recommend that you take an environment that is actually different, just to help you so you don't get confused. You want to be able to think creatively, so if that means lighting a candle, that's okay. You want to work from hard copy, so you want to have a large enough space in front of you. And you want to be able to separate out those three phases of what to index, what to call it, and where to put it. And you may find as you do these things that you want to adjust your environment a different way. In one case, you're going to use a highlighter. In another case, you're going to start using your computer or a laptop. I will also say that there are a number of indexing tools that you might want to invest in. Generally speaking, for about $600, you can get a top-of-the-line indexing tool. An indexing application is to indexing what Microsoft Word is to authoring. Microsoft Word is a terrible document, is a terrible program for actually trying to build the documentation. It's not good for building books, but it is great for writing. Microsoft Word is ultimately responsible for, Microsoft, with this program, invented cut and paste, which is the ultimate tool for authoring. Indexing tools have similar functionalities, the ability to check that your cross-references are accurate, the ability to indent your sub-entries in a formal way, and so on. There is a learning curve with any tool, but again, it's $600. And if you're trying to save $2,000, spending $600 to do it yourself isn't such a bad thing, and you will find that your productivity increases if you've given yourself enough time to learn the basics of the tool. Also, if at any point along the way you want to give up and give it to somebody else, indexing tools are compatible with indexers, so you will be able to contact somebody. Also, the output of an indexing tool will be exactly what your publisher is looking for, and that's usually a good thing. If you have to provide something that they have to retype in some way, they may not be very happy with you. They may also bring in certain kinds of mistakes. In general, for a 200-page book, I would estimate that the indexing tool will save you about 4 hours of time. So imagine an hour of time saved for every 50 pages. If you think you can write an index in a week and you only save 4 hours, you may not care. But if you want to leave yourself 3 weeks to index, that 4 hours, 8 hours, 12 hours, it definitely adds up. A professional indexer can index a book, say, 1 hour for every 10 pages of book. So a 200-page book will require 2 weeks to index. That's a professional who knows the tool and is using it, who knows a little bit about the subject matter or more, and certainly knows about indexing. I would estimate that if you're trying to figure out how to index for the first time and you really want to leave yourself enough time, figure it's going to take twice as long. That is 1 hour for every 5 pages. That is a tremendous amount of time to invest. If an indexing tool will save you some of that time, then I do recommend the investment. And again, you can go to the American Society for Indexers to learn more about those tools. If you want to index using Microsoft Word because that's what's in front of you, or you're indexing in XML because you're a technical person, or FrameMaker because that's what you're working with, or InDesign because that's where you are in the production process, that's fine. Those tools are not as efficient or accurate as the tools that indexers use, but that said, it's what's available, it's cheaper, it will still do its job to some extent once you learn it, and the kinds of things that indexers hate about those tools will not be the kinds of things that you're aware of. Indexers are looking for tools that are incredibly flexible. You are just looking to get the job done, and you may not notice any of those big problems. That said, there is still the possibility to learn how to use those tools well for indexing, and I do recommend playing around with the tool before you attempt to use it. In addition to the working environment and the tools, all the stuff you're trying to set up before you begin, I would then also recommend that you understand your standards or your goals. So there are going to be standards regarding your layout. For example, should your cross-references have italics? What do you use for your page number ranges? And you may know that you can have a range. Let's suppose you're creating a range from page 125 to 128. How do you represent that on a page? Is it 125-128, 125N-128? Is it 125-8? These are certain kinds of standards that you may assume, but you should probably talk to your publisher. Say, I want to see an index that is laid out the way you want mine to be laid out. And you put that next to you as you work so that you're not creating more work for somebody else, including yourself. There are also going to be standards defined by the industry. These are usually regarded to the content. You're going to know, if you're doing an art book, how illustrations are represented in the index and if they're included at all. There may be certain terms which are bold-faced in your book because it's the first mention. You may find that in your industry, the first mention of a term is always indexed. If you understand the kinds of things that people are looking for, especially in books that are relatively standard, that's great. For larger books that might have teacher editions or student editions or workbooks, there are going to be certain industry standards in terms not only of how they're indexed, but how they're indexed in parallel or not in parallel. And if you understand that information, if you've taken the time to review that information before you begin, then instead of having to figure it out from scratch, you can kind of follow what everybody else has done. And in fact, if there are other authors you know of who have written their own indexes, you should definitely stay in touch with them, not just up front, but throughout the entire process. For times you have questions, for times you get frustrated, there's nothing better than to have somebody you can network with, and someone who, as another author, has been in your shoes and may very well ask you to return the favor when it's time for them to index again. There are also audience standards to consider. If you're writing for students, if you're writing for professionals, if you're writing for professors, there are different expectations over what you're going to want in the index and the language that's going to be used. And it's always very helpful to have a sense of that. Again, the best way to do this, look at other books that have been published in your field, perhaps even competing books. If you're writing a math textbook for high school students, look at other high school math books. Take a look at what those indexes look like and decide what do you like and not like about those indexes for the audience you're using. And again, try to set some examples up for yourself before you begin. One of the biggest challenges that anyone indexing will face is the sudden realization that what you've been doing for all this time is not the way you really want it done. It's essentially changing your mind midstream. It's an extremely normal thing to happen, but you want to minimize how bad it is. If you just dive in page one, start going, and 100 pages in, you decide, oh, you know what? Well, that's 100 pages you have to redo. And then 300 pages, you do it again. Oh, you know what? Now that's 300 pages you have to redo. It's much better to take the time to think out where you're going before you start. It's not that different from writing. You don't necessarily sit down feeling all enthusiastic writing page one and expect to get to the end of the book. You generally, at some point, have to stop, create an outline, essentially build your table of contents before you begin. Indexing is the same way. One last thing you want to make sure you get right is if there are specific book elements that you will or will not include, it helps to know this up front. Do glossaries get indexed? That's an open question. Some glossaries do not get indexed. After all, they're already alphabetical. And if you're looking up a definition, people know to look in the glossary and not the index. Other people will say that it's part of the book and it should be indexed, and it's better to have the definitions indexed where the terms themselves are mentioned instead of pretending the glossary doesn't exist. Are you going to index figures because of their captions, because of their information, or are you really just going to focus for the text around it, which refer to the figures? Are there appendices that you want or don't want to index? If you've got a book that has photographs in the middle, the glossy pages that get inserted, what if they don't have page numbers? Maybe you will index the pictures and you'll want captions, and maybe you won't. Understanding the elements of the book and how you're going to index them is important to help you pace yourself and to make sure that you're not missing something important. Now, all of that, in many ways, is setup, and the setup is extremely important. So even before you get to that first phase of what to index in terms of the content, you want to have the right environment, you want to know what you're trying to create, you want to have standards, you want to have precedent, you want to set up your network. You want to be ready to do this, because if this is going to take 3 weeks of your life, it would really help if you could line up that 3 weeks exactly in the way that suits you best. Now, does it have to take 3 weeks? No. If you really think you could crank an index out in 2 days, you could probably skip all the preparation. But writing an index, especially for larger books, for technical books, for structured books, does take longer, and you just want to make sure that you're prepared so that you're less likely to quit in the middle, that you're going to be as efficient as possible throughout the entire process, and that you don't get it wrong only to have to redo it or have the publisher come back and redo it later. Keep in mind, if you write an index and somebody's not satisfied with it and they still have to go to a professional or somebody else to do it, you really haven't saved anyone any time or money. So it's just important to get it right the first time around. There's usually not enough time to create an index, revise it again, review it, get a third-party review, the way there is for the material that you wrote. You know, your book went through substantive edits and technical edits and copy edits and proofreading, and that's normally part of the process. The index is this last thing. Everything that's been late is just fighting. The index suddenly has to get done in fewer days than are allowed, and there's just not time to look at it again. And in fact, the index is one of those things that, as you know, as an author, is perhaps the first thing anybody looks at when they want to use the book. So it is important to lay out your framework before you begin. But now we begin. The first thing you want to start paying attention to is that what to index phase. How do you know what goes in the index? The first and biggest advice I can give you is to use your table of contents. You know your book. You know it backwards and forwards. You could pick out any sentence and probably tell where it is in the book. But writing is not a big picture process. It's a focused process. You think of the whole book, then you think of a chapter, a section, a subsection, a paragraph, a sentence, the phrase, a word, the punctuation around that word. If you're writing well, you're not trying to picture the whole book in your head, but you're trying to make an outline and then forget almost all of the book as you work. Indexing, however, requires you to maintain the big picture. So look at the table of contents before you do anything. My recommendation is to print the table of contents. And in fact, if you have the software, print out the most detailed table of contents you can create and read it. Genuinely read it. What are the big topics according to the table of contents? Not your memory or your imagination, but according to the table of contents. Look at the names of the chapters. Everything you see in the table of contents is part of the framework. It's already helping you figure out your preferred language, and you can even write it down as notes. In fact, I would recommend taking the table of contents and putting it next to you at all times. As a writer, you're less aware of what's happening in Chapter 8 when you're writing Chapter 4. But as an indexer, you have to have Chapter 4 and Chapter 8 in your head at the same time, and a glance at the table of contents will do that. Use the table of contents to get your big picture awareness. Use it to find the best words that you can use. And use it for structural choices, both those that you've already chosen, but also those that you didn't. You may remember that you moved things around from chapter to chapter. How you had it originally may not have been good for the writing, but it's great for the indexing because there is no one way to organize an index. With a book, you've got to bind it and have to put the pages in some physical order. But as you know, like with a website, anything can be connected to anything, and with indexing, that's a good thing. The second important piece of advice regarding what to index is allowing yourself to not index things. As an author, you really want to include everything. Everything you wrote is a stroke of genius. That's the whole reason it's included. That's the whole reason none of the editors cut it out. It's in there for a reason, and that's great if you're reading and learning. Indexing does not work that way. Think about when you give somebody the address to a house. You don't have to describe the house. You don't have to tell them how many floors it is. You don't have to tell them who lived there. You don't have to tell them what color it is or the layout or if it's old. All you have to do is give them a pointer. You point to the address and you're done. With indexing, it's not about building a learning tool. It's just about getting them to the place where all that brilliant stuff you wrote becomes accessible. Do not attempt to reproduce the book in an index, but just point to the stuff that might be relevant and then allow them to experience what you wrote in the way it was meant to be read, in the narrative fashion within its context. Most of what you write is not indexable. It is important, but not indexable. It's like, what do you need to look up, and then you learn the rest. Think about a cookbook index as a simple example, and how recipes are indexed only by their important ingredients, by their names, and maybe by the genre. So you index cheesecakes as under dessert. But after that, the process. Nobody looks at a cookbook thinking, you know, oh, I have this rice cooker. What can I use the rice cooker for? No, people think, oh, rice cooker, I'll make rice, and they look it up as an important ingredient. The fact is you can use a rice cooker for stews and for a number of other things, but you don't look up rice cooker in the index. It's an important part of the process, but it is not how people think, and it is not what they index. So don't be afraid to speed the indexing up by skipping all the words, all the brilliant phrases. All the important ideas will jump out at you as saying, that's something someone will look up. And everything else, forget it. In general, even on a complicated book of a textbook page, there are only going to be about 4 to 6 things that you want to point to. You can use lots and lots of words to point to those things, but if you're pointing at 12 or 15 different things on a page, you are way over indexing, you are wasting your time, you are creating things people will not look up. And when you try to put all this stuff together, it's going to be a nightmare. You will create an index which looks like it was written by a beginner. Stay focused on what people really need to look up on the page, and you will find in general, you can have 12 things on one page, but if you have 12 on average, this is not an ordinary book. You're probably looking somewhere between 4 and 6. And again, I should point out that that varies on the style of book, how many words are on a page, what kind of page it is. But if you're over-indexing, you'll feel it. Your index is way too big. I also recommend you don't start indexing with Chapter 1. Start indexing Chapter 2 and save Chapter 1 until the end. Chapter 1 feels really, really important, but generally it's not that specific. It's a lot of definitions, it's a lot of background, a lot of environmental information. And to understand the scope of the book, you read Chapter 1. But to understand the index, you save Chapter 1 until the end. Or you can make the mistake of over-indexing right from the beginning. Start with Chapter 2 and index Chapter 1 when you're either halfway through the book or when you're completely finished. Another point that indexers talk about is they'll tell you that consistency is better than accuracy. In other words, if somebody knows how to use the index, they're in great shape. And the best way to make sure they know how to use it is to be consistent in what gets in the index and the language you're going to choose and how it's structured. If you treat everything as a special case, it will not only take you a lot of extra time, but it will actually prove unhelpful. You really want to look at the book as though it's uniform, despite the fact that it really isn't from your point of view. Consistency is going to be faster. And don't worry so much about the integrity of the writing, as I said, but just the integrity of the index. You just want to be accurate in terms of your page numbers. You can be really, really fancy and precise and do all sorts of fancy things, but it's just a pointing tool. It's not an educational tool. You're not quite throwing, you know, darts at a dartboard. You are deciding what needs to be looked at, but you don't need to worry about precision in the index nearly as much as you have in the writing. If you can get them there, let the writing do the rest of the work. Now, when it comes to indexing things in terms of their density, in terms of their page numbers, I have some tips that will speed the process up. The first is to not be afraid of creating page ranges. A lot of indexers, especially beginners and authors as well, will point to something in a very particular way and say, that's important, that's important, that's important, and they will index lots and lots on one page at an extremely fine level of granularity. While there's nothing wrong with this, it is faster to just point to the general topic. So if something is discussed for 4 pages, instead of indexing every paragraph for each of those 4 pages, you might find that you can index the 4 pages as a group. Maybe there are a couple of sub-entries in there. Maybe there are a couple of definitions you want to call out. But don't worry about using page ranges and saying, okay, I've got this covered. If you index only large sections, that's not good enough. But if you index only each paragraph as an individual basis, that's not good enough either. So feel free to think more broadly when you index things. It's fine to create ranges without sub-entries. It's okay to create sub-entries. But if you're going to create lots and lots and lots of sub-entries, you're overdoing it. If you tell somebody it starts on page 123 and ends on page 126, that's not so terrible. Anyone who turns to page 123 will find what they're looking for by flipping a couple of pages. You don't need to provide 12 sub-entries for a short range of pages. You're not providing any really helpful stuff. They can already find it. Just let them find it and trust that your text will guide them to what it is that they want to learn and what they want to see. And it is true that novice indexers, and I'm talking people who have the training but are just getting started, will create more sub-entries than they need. Building sub-entries feels like indexing, and you just do it because it feels good. And the reality is it's not necessarily helpful. Rein that temptation in. If you point to it, you've accomplished 90% of what indexing is about. After that, the additional access, all that sub-entry stuff you want to create, if you're running out of time or patience, then just cut back. people will still find what they need to find if you point them in the general area. Books also have a lot of repetition in them. Every chapter has a summary. You've got sidebars on a regular basis. You've got glossary, which is the same thing over and over and over again. Once you figure out how to index one of these elements, leverage that and index all of those elements the same way. In fact, you may find that when you index, you want to save all the summaries and all the sidebars and all the introductions until you're finished. Index the meat of the text and then go back and index those one after the other. You may find that that speeds up the process. Again, you use the table of contents to help you find chunks and relationships. Take advantage of that when you index. In the end, when it comes to what to index, you have to make a choice, and there's no good way to make this choice up front as so much as it would be from experience. You can either over-index and then cut back in an editing phase, or you can under-index and require yourself to go back and fill in the holes. Going back and filling in the holes is very hard. That said, if you over-index and cut, then you need to make sure you've left enough time to cut. A lot of times the indexing process can be exhausting. The last thing you want to do is have to do all the editing at the end. In fact, you might go so far as if you've got a graduate student who you trust, that's the person who should edit your index. Go ahead and write the first draft and then get somebody to help you out for free or for a nominal fee to clean up the answers, to clean up your results. It also gives you a time to take a break and you can go back to it after it's been edited. Obviously, the best approach is getting it right the first time. This is why you start with Chapter 2, get the hang of it, see how it is, until you go back and then you index Chapter 1 and the rest. You want to dive right in and figure it out before you continue too far deeply. So now you've figured out what to index and you're starting to think about where to put it. And I made some comments about sub-entries. Don't create too many sub-entries. Don't worry about that. The length of an index is not a measure of the quality of the index. However, instead of over-indexing, don't index everything, you know, oh, here's that, oh, here's that, oh, here's that, oh, here's that, when you don't have to. Instead, the length of your index is going to come from the vocabulary you choose. Whenever you find a term or an idea that you want to index, the first thing you should do when it comes to that second phase of what to call it is basically index that thing to death. In other words, don't index every other line, but every time you find something you do want to index, come up with all the vocabulary you can. Brainstorm. Use a thesaurus. You have to think outside the authoring box, especially for technical documentations where words are much too powerful to play around with. You need to play around with them in the index. You don't know what the other people are going to use as a term, so you want to predict as many possibilities as possible. Throw a wide net. And then when you choose a term that you know you're going to index five different ways, the recommendation there is to make a note of those five other things. In fact, I'll even go further than that. I would suggest that if you have a preferred term, that all the other terms you're going to include should all be either cross-references or at least leave yourself a note. I have a note where I use my own name in an index. So there's a term directories and there's a term folders. And in the computer environment, a directory and a folder, basically the same thing. If folder is the word I want to use, but I don't know how often it's going to appear in the index, I will make myself a note which looks like this. Directories, Seth, C, folders. The idea is that when I finished indexing the entire book under folders, the note with my name on it will tell me, how do I want to handle directories versus folders? Are they really the same thing? Is one a cross-reference? Do I want to take all my references for folders and copy them under directories? The idea is that if you're going to come up with six or seven different ways to say something, you don't want to have to remember those six or seven things as you go through the book. That's a lot of remembering, a lot of brain space you're holding hostage. So leave yourself notes. Every time you think of a word that's not preferred, make yourself a note to figure it out later. This is what I like to think of as not a cross-reference, but a weight reference. You're connecting ideas, but you don't want to connect them until you're completely finished with the book. So you make little notes in the margin. Yeah, use this term. This is a good term. Not sure if this is the same. And hold all those to the side so that when you get back to the last phase of where to put it, you can decide, do I want to put these page references under every one of these terms, under some of these terms? Do I want cross-references? Have I really decided that? And only after you've decided it do you manage it, not while you're working. postpone as many decisions as you can until the end. Because the decisions will be more accurate if you've had a chance to index the whole book than they will be when you take a guess right out of the box. But dreaming up lots of words is still important. If you know you have a way to hang on to them until later, then you should be free to invent them whenever you want. And I do recommend that, especially if you're indexing your own material, you have to be thinking outside the authoring box. There is a distinction between a cross-reference and a double post, and I'll just state this quickly. A cross-reference, which is like a see reference or see also reference, is where you're pointing from one term to another, either to help them understand the correct word that they should use, or see also as a way of saying there's more information elsewhere in the index, go look it up there. Double posting or cross posting or multiple posting represent where you take page numbers, page references, sub-entries, and you essentially copy them so that they're appearing in the index in two different places. If I have lots of page numbers after the entry for folders, I could take those same entries and also index them under directories so that although the word itself is different, those entries as a whole are exactly the same. And double posting is useful if you don't have space requirements because it doesn't matter what the person is looking up. They can look up directories, they can look up folders, they'll get the same results right away. So the distinction between double posting or, say, creating a cross-reference, like redirecting them, directories, see folders, it's not a very important one, which is why you don't have to think about that up front. But it is important that all the ideas appear or are accessible under all the terms that might be useful. That is, every time I have an entry for folders, I'd better be able to find it somehow if I look it up under directories. The ability to come up with all those words is there. So as you work, build up a system of language. Create a brainstorm page filled with words. Look at a thesaurus. Keep notes. Remember, when you see the word directories, it's not just the word directories, it's all the other words that are attached to it. And make sure that every time you find something indexable, you punch it out under all those terms. And the best way to do that is to create notes on the side. That's why, as I said, I put my name in there. I put Seth. Directories, Seth, see folders. Since I know the word Seth is never going to appear in my index, I have no problem searching the index for every time I put in the word Seth. It's a way of deferring the decision. And I find that that tends to speed things up in a big way. So also in terms of the where to put it, I mean, that's really where your language is going to come in. As much as we talk about the second phase as what to call it, the reality is every time you come up with a new word, it's another place in the index that something can appear. That's what's going to make your index longer, is you're going to take the content and put it in lots and lots and lots of places. For me, that's the favorite, my favorite part of indexing, is being able to explore the language. Sub-entries, on the other hand, as I said before, are not as important. If you are really, really focused on all of your sub-entries, then you're missing the important stuff, which is what's going in the index in the first place and where in the index is it going. Sub-entries will happen naturally. As human beings, we're natural organizers. We love putting things in our pocket, and when they come out of our pocket, if we don't put them in the right place, they get lost. So we organize. We have ways of knowing the differences between things very quickly when we look at them. It's why you might enjoy those puzzles where there are five differences between this picture and that picture, because it's hard. Because we do it so naturally, they have to be hard in order for it to be a puzzle. Sub-entries, they're just going to happen. Don't worry about sub-entries. Worry about the first word. If the first word is good, then you're in great shape, because the first word, the main entry heading, that's where people are going to turn to. People don't go looking for sub-entries. People go looking for main entries. They look for the main headings. And then the sub-entries kick in. The sub-entries, their only purpose of the sub-entry is to organize information for speed of looking something up or for precision of looking something up. If I go to an entry that's followed by 100 page numbers, okay, great, I could find it, but I don't want to go looking through 100 pages. So break them out. Break them out into 10 sub-entries, 5 sub-entries, anything, so I don't have to go looking through 100 different numbers. But if you have only one page number, you don't need any sub-entries. And I've seen a lot of indexes where you have a main heading followed by a whole bunch of subheadings, and the page numbers for all of those sub-entries are almost identical. 83, 84, 83, 83, 85, 84. To me, that's overkill, it's useless, it's unhelpful, and there are a lot of usability problems with that as well. So if you're thinking, let me make a subentry, let me make a subentry, let me make a subentry, then you're missing the point. The point is just to make sure that they can find it from the main heading level. And the subentries are only for when the main heading is being very, very heavily used. So we take these two pieces of advice and we put them together. The first, don't be afraid to create page ranges. And second, don't overdo the subentries just because it feels fun. And if you get those two things right, you will build a balanced index with acceptable access, acceptable findability, and a minimum amount of time and pain for you creating the index. So those are the last two and how it all fits together. First set of advice, find the things that are truly important in terms of what to put in the index. And don't worry about getting everything so precise down to the word. Just hit the general points because you know your text will cover you from there. That's going to lead to the creation of page ranges. Granted, if you have an isolated topic in one paragraph, you're only going to point to the paragraph. But don't be afraid to hit the book more broadly than you think the index allows, because the index does allow for broad access as well as precision access. Once you have that broad access, if it's too broad, you're going to want subentries. You're going to want more words. But breadth by itself is not necessarily a problem. It is much more important to point to a topic in lots and lots of different main headings than it is to take a main heading and break it up into a million pieces. So focus on indexing only what's particularly important and don't overdo it. Come up with as many words as you can and then just drop them into the index and let the subentries happen by themselves, almost accidentally. Subentries will happen by themselves if you let them. If you force it, you'll do too much. And those are the basic pieces of advice. Now, it seems very strange to sort of throw them out there without all the training and the vocabulary building and the background. But if I were talking to somebody who knew anything about indexing, I would almost want to write all this stuff down and say, okay, don't forget this, don't forget this, don't forget this. Of course, the reality is a giant checklist of things that you should and shouldn't do is really useful as a refresher and not necessarily as a reference. So since I know this call is being recorded, my recommendation is that before you index, now and every time from now on, take the hour it takes to listen to this recording and go through it as a refresher, or listen to it and take notes and find ways to rewrite those notes. And of course, with that, the final piece of advice would be this: learn from experience. The first index you ever write is either going to be really easy or really hard or somewhere in between. It's going to be fun or obnoxious. And you might swear that you're never going to do it again, which is fine. But if it doesn't seem so bad, and you think you might just do it again someday, maybe you don't publish every 4 months, and you think, the next time I write a book, it'll be 3 years, sure, I'll index that, then I really recommend doing a postmortem. That is, think of the process, think of all the things you did right and did wrong, and write them down. You've got lots and lots of books out there about how to write, but there just aren't any really accessible books on how to index. They're way too complicated. They're worried way too much about how you alphabetize people's names than they are about the process of indexing. There seems to be a gap in the teaching there. So you're going to have to build that yourself. You build your network of people, and you write down your notes, and you can use this call as a starting place. And have a checklist, have a guidebook that will help you the next time you write the index. And even so, there's nothing more valuable when writing an index than to look at somebody else's index, hopefully you think it's a good one, for a subject matter that is identical or similar. Because working from example is one of the easiest ways to understand what your index is supposed to look like, and it gives you something to shoot for while you make all of these subjective and sometimes very difficult decisions through the indexing process. I'll mention again the American Society for Indexing as a resource. Their website is www.asindexing.org. They recently published a new book called Indexing for Editors and Authors, which is available from its website. There's a link right now that says Buy Books. But the ASI website actually has a phenomenal index, which you would hope. And you can look it up under books or under the title of the book, and you can find it. It is available now, and it's a great book for non-indexers to understand indexing well enough, if not to write your own index, than to communicate to other indexers, as well as to evaluate the indexes that others are creating. And as I said before, I also recommend that you can talk to other authors and other indexers. If you want to find indexers or you just want to talk to them, the ASI website is a great place to start. You can also do a simple Google search for finding things. Keep in mind that if you do work with an indexer, either because they write your index or you're consulting with them or you're just paying them $100 to review your index and give you feedback, make sure that you understand the credentials and the background of that indexer. As we talked about at the very beginning, it's important that the indexer know enough about the subject matter in order to be able to provide that review. And it is also important that this person be a real indexer. There's a lot of production work that's going overseas these days. There's nothing inherently wrong with it. But I will say that the biggest challenge you're going to run into is that overseas is not where you're going to find native English speakers. And that's something that's really important when it comes to writing an index. And so it's important that you don't go to just the massive production house, but you need to make sure that the person you're working with is an English speaker in the dialect of English that you are. In my case, it's American English. There are British English, Australian English, European English. They're out there, and they do know indexing and do a good job. But if you're going to work with somebody, you want to work with somebody who's the most appropriate and the best at what you're trying to do. And so, again, it's buyer beware. There are a lot of us out there, and you want to choose carefully.
This has been an educational presentation brought to you by the Text and Academic Authors Association.